Well, thank you, Roger, and thank you to the organizers for organizing this wonderful conference and inviting me to give this talk. A disclaimer, this is my first talk on this topic, so it may be a little rough. So I'm going to talk about entanglement entropy of composite fermion fluid at half filling. So this is the result for composite fermion. This is the result for free fermion. That's the bottom line. If you can find more details in this PRL that's just been published. As I my thing decided not to work, so I'm going to go without remote. As I think about this talk, I thought of this story of stone soup. I don't know how many of you know about this story, but the story goes, there is a hungry traveler showing up at a village, and all she has is magic stone, or it, depending on your culture, it could be magic nail, or it could be magic shell, doesn't matter, it's got to be magic something simple. And then asks the villager for food. And the village is a poor village, and nobody can provide a huge meal for the traveler. And each person provides something little. Could be water, could be potato, cabbage. And because it's a magic stone, when you put it all together, the resulting thing is a magic soup, which is very delicious. So what I have here for my magic stone is half-filled Fermi fluid. And I'm going to need help from the villagers. And the various ingredients that's going to enter the soup and make it possibly, hopefully, tasty is fermions coupled to Chern-Simons gauge field, composite fermion wave functions, variational Monte Carlo, and finally the entanglement entropy. So now before I present my magic stone, I would like to give some little bit of a background. The background is that these non-Fermi liquids are ubiquitous. They are everywhere. I'm sure they're in your backyard. Cuprates, although they are famous for the superconductivity, largest part of its phase space exhibits this so-called strange metal behavior. Manganese silicide, heavy fermions, many strongly correlated systems exhibit the so-called non-Fermi liquid. Now, what is a non-Fermi liquid? Well, it is defined as what it is not. So, well then, there can be many ways something can be not human. Could be a chair, could be a dog. Similarly, many different things can be non-Fermi liquid by not having any quasi-particle weight, that is the pole vanishing, transport exhibiting some weird power law in specific heat, and diverging effective mass. Now, because there's a lot of them, and it's obviously a correlated phenomenon, we would like to understand it. The challenge is that the notions that we are familiar with, that we are used to thinking of in terms of order parameter and symmetry breaking are not the route, because these phases often don't show any obvious form of broken symmetry. So that's the challenge. Then does that mean we give up? No, we try various things what we can. And for instance, there have been a lot of progress made with holographic constructions of non-Fermi liquids. And more conventional way of thinking about diagrammatics of organizing the diagrams in various ways could be large N in this way of N or the other way of N, where fermions are coupled to emergent gauge bosons or to some quantum critical bosons. And there are many experts in the audience, I'm not going to belabor, but we all know that many cases that these expansions fail. So what do we do then when analytical approaches are not tractable? One alternative is to think about many-body wave functions. But even in terms of wave functions, when you try to make a fermionic wave function that is many-body, and that's obviously different from free fermion, that's not an easy thing to do. One by now famous construction is so-called D-Wave Bose Metal, which was a tour de force effort of various people, some of them in the audience. But it's a model construction without an obvious experimental realization. So there comes my magic stone that is half-filled Fermi fluid, which is whose wave function is known, whose quantum field theory is known. Doesn't mean you can solve it, but it's nice to know what it is. And most importantly, there is an experimental system. So now we're going to try to make the soup. And if we are successful, it's going to be entanglement entropy of poster child non-Fermi liquid that is half-filled composite fermion fluid. And hopefully, if we learn something from this exercise, that might shed some light into a larger context question of how is entanglement entropy or properties of entanglement, what does it tell us about correlated matter? Let me start with the warm-up. This is 2D free fermions under magnetic field. All of you would have learned this in your kindergarten or sophomore, depending on where you're from. Well, this is a single particle Hamiltonian. This is your momentum, just the kinetic energy. And you can all solve the Schrodinger equation, and you get the Landau levels. So these are the energy levels separated by the cyclotron frequency. And each level is highly degenerate. And the number of states within the level is given by this number of flux quanta. So it is natural to think about the notion of filling factor, especially when your temperatures are much small compared to this Landau level gap, the cyclotron frequency. And we talk about this filling factor, there is a number of electrons per number of flux quanta. So now how does it change when we include interaction? Now, without interaction, we just expect that, well, there is going to be a gap once I fill all these states. You have to remember we're dealing with fermions. We cannot put two fermions in the same state. So once I fill all these states, I have to go to this other state, and there is this gap. So I expect some gap behavior when I change the filling factor by integer numbers. Now, when you take the interactions into account, instead of seeing some change when you change the filling factor only by the integers, there are just so many zoo of states that's appearing when your filling fraction is changing by a fractional amount. So from the free fermion intuition, you're still within that flat band and adding a couple more electrons, and that shouldn't mean much. However, when you take the interaction into account, well, experimentally, empirically, we know this is an interaction effect because it required the system to become very clean to be visible. You see these plateaus. And each plateau has a lot of story behind it. And this led to the Nobel Prize in 1998. Now, I'm not going to be talking about any of the plateau because, after all, I said I have a stone, and stone's kind of boring at a first glance. And that's my half-filling state here. So at half-filling, there is no plateau, and there is no gap. So it's not obvious why should it be interesting. However, it turns out you can think of this half-filling state as sort of a mother of all fractional quantum Hall states. So this is showing the energy gaps for different fractional quantum Hall states, which are scaling with magnetic field that is centered around half-filling, which is provides support for thinking about half-filling as sort of a mother state in a figurative way. I can go into more detail, but for now I'm going to move on, and we can return to that statement. Not only that, half-filling provides sort of a framework for thinking about other filling fractions. It is also known that other half-filled states, that is, you can get 5 half by filling two lowest lying Landau levels, or 9 half by filling 4 lowest lying Landau levels. Or you can, if you include spin degeneracy with 1 or 2, depending on which language you are talking about. But if you ignore the filled Landau levels, these are effectively all half-filled states. However, unlike the half-filled state at lowest Landau level, which is gapless, 5-half state is a famous gapped quantum Hall state, which is a leading candidate for non-abelian anions. And at 9-half state, this so-called nematic behavior is observed. From the language of the degrees of freedom that are natural in the half-filled states, we can think of this 5-half state as a paired state, and this 9-half state as a nematic state, this anisotropic state. So these phenomenologies point to the half-filled state having some interesting aspects to it, interesting flavor to it. So how do we think about it? Well, the way we think about this half-filled state in a sort of a pictorial sense is in the sense in the language of so-called composite fermions. So the composite fermion is an idea of so-called flux attachment. And what you do is that you're going to we decide to view electron as some sort of particle with two flux quanta attached. So it's a composite object. When you attach even number of flux quanta, its statistics, this composite object's statistics, is identical to statistics of electrons. Therefore, it is a composite fermion. This idea of composite fermion was first introduced by Junendra Jain, who realized that you can think of fractional quantum Hall effect of electrons as integer quantum Hall effect of this composite fermions in the following way. So now imagine you have this composite object, and if you are at one-third filling, that means you have 3 flux quanta per electron. Now this composite object's flux attachment, the direction of the flux is, if it is opposite that of the external magnetic field, two of it is going to cancel 2 of the flux quanta, and you're left with 1 flux quanta per electron. So then you can think about the one-third filling as integer quantum Hall effect of these composite objects. A little bit later, it was realized by Halperin, Lee, and Reed that the half-filled state, that is observed in the magnetic field can be viewed as this composite fermion state without any magnetic field. At half filling, you have 2 flux quanta per electron, and if they cancel with this emergent flux that we've attached, then this composite object is not experiencing any field at all. I promise quantum field theory view of this. Quantum field theory version of flux attachment uses Chern-Simons theory. So here I've introduced the emergent gauge field whose action is the Chern-Simons action. And then this Chern-Simons gauge field interacts with my composite fermions as an additional gauge field. Now this A is what's describing my external magnetic field, which is not dynamic. Now if I take an action like this and extremize it, and the composite fermion field psi is related to electron through this phase, which gives the flux attachment. And if I extremize this action, I arrive at a constraint which says my flux due to the Chern-Simons gauge is going to be equal to the density or related to the density. And mean field theory would be that my emergent gauge field precisely cancels the gauge field associated with the external field. Now, it would be nice if I could just take this quantum field theory and calculate the entanglement entropy. But it seems to calculate entanglement entropy analytically is not for the faint-hearted, like myself. So we're going to take a numerical approach, and we're going to work with a composite fermion wave function. So this is a composite fermion wave function, which consists of the Slater determinant of what seems to be a plane wave, which gives me overall fermionic statistics to my my many-body wave function, and the so-called bosonic Laughlin factor. Now, because of the magnetic field, this R, this coordinate-like notation here, is actually the non-commutative guiding centers within the Landau level. So it is projected to be within a given Landau level. And this translation operator actually translates the position of my particle I by this vector D, which is related to the momentum that's written here, and the magnetic length. And finally, the all-important bosonic Laughlin part, the familiar expression, familiar to some of you, would be for the one-third filling Laughlin, which is Zi minus Zj to the third power. Now my filling factor is one-half, so this is to the second power, which makes this whole thing even under exchange, which is the reason why I need the Slater determinant to make the whole thing anti-commute or fermionic. Now, I want to construct this wave function for something that I can compare with the free fermion and look at the scaling, which means I need to construct the Fermi C. I need the momentum. Typically, people use composite fermion wave function on a sphere, but in a sphere geometry, you don't really have a momentum as a good quantum number. So we're going to work with a periodic boundary condition, or torus geometry, in which case this Zi minus Zj square has to become something that respects the toroidal boundary condition, and that's the elliptic functions. So these are the details of the wave functions. And now we're going to try to evaluate the entanglement entropy. Now, to have a complete description of the wave function, I need to decide on my values of k that I'm going to care about. That's the Fermi C that I have to fill. We think of filling the Fermi C as something very simple. Well, you just fill it up. But that's the notion that comes from knowing the kinetic energy. The kinetic energy is proportional to k squared. However, in the current situation, we have partially filled Landau level, which is a flat band. So I don't have kinetic energy, which can guide me with choosing the values of k. What was proposed by my collaborator, Duncan Haldane, is that you can instead minimize something that is like Hamiltonian, that is ki, the relative momentum. And when you minimize this relative momentum and fill the Fermi C that way, it gives the right total momentum for the system as you get from the exact diagonalization. And moreover, when the total momentum is zero, by choosing the number of points suitably, minimizing this Hamiltonian is equivalent to minimizing the usual kinetic energy. Which means if I choose the number of my electrons or fermions wisely, I can work with the fixed set of k points for my composite fermions as well as free fermions. Now I'm going to use the development that's now already 5 years old by Roger and collaborators, where people realize that if you make two copies of your system, the real copy and the ancillary, and exchange your subsystem, your subregion A that you're trying to calculate the bipartite entanglement entropy of, the expectation value of this operator, which amounts to exchanging just the subsystem, It's precisely the second Rényi entropy. So now we are all set to try to carry out this project. At this point, I, as a traveler, am in a position trying to do something that I've never done before, and I don't know where it's going to end up. I don't know whether this soup is going to taste any good. So what do you do when you're in such a situation? Well, you recruit an undergraduate student who is fearless. That's the great advantage of undergraduate students. They don't know enough to be scared. So fearless, competent, undergraduate students, nearly free. That's Xiao, Zhongping Xiao. And you also have to team up with experts. So I teamed up with experts and recruited Zhongping. And we went on to tackle this problem. And the first issue we encountered was that trying to calculate this swap operator, when you have this itinerant degrees of freedom, initially in this paper, the wave functions that were dealt with were spin wave functions in the bond variable basis. And they didn't have this issue of number of particles fluctuating within the region, but we had that issue of number of particles fluctuating. And my truly complex, that is really complex, complex wave function with the complex numbers is not just even, you know, positive or negative. It's got complex phase all over. So we had to tackle the issues of convergence. We first made use of the sign trick, which was implemented in this paper by Zhang, Grover, and Vishwanath. But then we further improved upon that by doing what is appropriate for our system, where the particle number is fluctuating. Similar kind of tricks for further factorizing the swap operators were implemented in these publications as well. So now we're going to take an intermission and step out, not out, but out of my calculation to the cases of Fermi gas so that we can figure out what to expect. Well, it's been now well known that the Fermi gas is a interesting system which has this logarithmic enhancement of entanglement entropy. This was first pointed out by Gilf and Klitsch in this paper, where they built on the conjecture by Widom to postulate this sort of dependence of the entanglement entropy or the Rényi entropy. And it was recently proven rigorously to be the case. And interesting thing about this formula is that not only there is this logarithmic, multiplicative logarithmic correction to the area law, but this whole coefficient is entirely known for free fermions. And that coefficient is purely geometric. So this coefficient can be evaluated by just knowing the boundary of your subregion A and your Fermi surface and calculating this integral. And some insight into this aspects were given in the paper by Brian Swingle, where he pointed out, well, it is known that in 1D CFTs, that entanglement entropy depends on the log of the linear dimension of the subsystem. And now if you think of the 2D free fermion as a bunch of 1D wires that are chiral going out at each point in the K-space along the along your Fermi surface, you can think of 2D fermions as patches of 1D chiral fermions. And now the entire entanglement entropy is going to be given by log L times the number of patches that you should be keeping track of. And Brian argued that the number of patches should be roughly L over A, A being the short distance cutoff. So there is such insight and intuition about free fermions. Now coming back to our calculation, so when we carried out our calculation for 37 fermions, this is the result of entanglement entropy that we get numerically. This is the second Rényi entropy over lambda. Lambda is dimensionless, scale kf times L. L is the linear dimension of the subsystem. And it's showing the scaling that we expected from various publications. The slope is slightly off from what you expect analytically, but that's a finite size effect. Now, this is the result for the composite fermions. And what we are observing is that the scaling is the same as that for free fermions, in the sense that it is still lambda log lambda behavior, S over lambda is linear in log lambda. But the slope is quite different. If you have keen eyes, you might also observe some oscillations, although we are it's hard for us to pull out the period because of the error bars. So oscillations are sort of within our error bar up here. But what we're observing is that the scaling relation is the same, but the slope is different. And slope is pretty much exactly a factor of 2. Now, how does this compare to previous results on, you know, some related systems? One of the related systems, related in the sense that there was a gapless fermion with Fermi surface, is a critical spin liquid studied by these authors, which amounts to Gutzüller projective Fermi surface. This is critical spin liquid with spin on Fermi surface, and there the entanglement entropy was found to be not only equal in the scaling, but the coefficient, to the best of the author's knowledge, was also not changing compared to free fermions. Another result by these authors is a Fermi liquid modeled using 2D bosonization. So in 2D bosonization, or higher dimensional bosonization, you can take 4 scattering interactions into account, and they found the entanglement entropy to be the same as that of free fermions. These authors studied Slater Jastrow type wave functions, and they found slight enhancement in the slope. But it's hard to relate these Slater Jastrow wave functions to its non-interacting limit, so it's kind of hard to interpret their results. And then there was scaling conjecture for some non-Fermi liquid states by Swingle and Santel, where they conjectured that scaling relation would still stay the same. So to summarize, we have numerically evaluated the scaling of second Rennie entropy, and we found that the composite fermion, which is arguably the poster child non-Fermi liquid state, which has the description of fermion coupled to Chern-Simons gauge field, has this scaling relation that is same functional form as free fermion, but with the coefficient that is about double that of free fermion. Now the question is, how do we think about this double? There are many ways to make 2. You can make 2 by 2 times 1. You can make 2 by 1 plus 1. And I'm sure you can come up with other ways of making 2. And I don't know yet what is the right way to make my 2. Also, we don't know what are the general conditions for correlations to affect entanglement. Some speculations we have, we've heard. One of the speculations that I've heard was that could it be simply the fact that we have Zi minus Zj to the power 2? You know, there's 2 there, you know, here's 2 and there's 2, so maybe they're related. We know that is not the case. How do we know this? We've tortured the wave function and tried some unphysical wave functions to see if we change this factor, does it change the entanglement entropy scaling by the proportional coefficient, and we confirm that is not the case. My latest speculation that is about 7 hours old is that could it be the overdamped collective mode? It is known from these authors that the effect of the gauge fluctuation when you go beyond mean field theory depends on the range of interaction. But for the Coulomb interaction, the entropy is enhanced to T log to T as opposed to linear in T for free fermions. And this is an effect of the existence of collective mode, which requires interaction, which is in this case overdamped because of the gauge field, but nevertheless it is giving enhancement in the thermal entropy. And I'm wondering whether this could have something to do with our observation. I don't know the answers yet, and I would welcome any suggestions, speculations, ideas from all of the audience. And before I close, I would like to acknowledge my collaborators, Xiao, who was an undergraduate student when he finished this project, or nearly finished the project. He's now a graduate student at Binghamton University. Ed Rizai, I think this is like very old picture. I had a hard time finding his picture, and Duncan Haldane. And the funding sources and the supercomputing power. And thank you for your attention.
Questions? Possible speculations of how to make two?
So there's a recent work by Song which relates this new equal to half, maybe secretly related to some Dirac fermions. Do you think by relates to relativistic fermions can help?
I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Just answer Hong's question and then ask a question of my own. So the chemical, Song's proposal is that it is a Dirac fermion with a chemical potential above the Dirac point. So for the low energy properties, it doesn't actually matter that it's a Dirac fermion. The second,
To elaborate, for the free fermion, the way we relate to the conformal field theory is to look at the linear dispersion near the Fermi surface anyway. So whether you have Dirac or quadratic dispersion away from the Fermi surface probably won't matter. I think that's what Max is saying. And your question?
Yes, or maybe more common. So actually this is extremely interesting, because if you look at the effective theory of the HLR state and the effective theory of the spin-on Fermi surface state, then actually it's the same effective theory, especially in the new formulation by Son, but where the Chern-Simons term for the gauge field is absent. But even with that Chern-Simons term, doesn't actually change the leading order, is not expected to change the leading order behavior. So the fact that, and kind of the approach that you have and the approach that Tarun had, somewhat similar,
It's identical.
You're projecting into the lowest Landau level.
The numerical scheme is the same. Wave functions are different, right?
But again, I mean,
yes, I have projection to the lowest Landau level, and I don't know how much difference that is making. That's something that we are going to try to experiment.
And he had Gutzwiller projections.
Yes. So
in some sense, they're also similar. And the fact that you're getting coefficients which are different by a factor of two, I think that's very interesting. I don't understand.
Yeah, so I don't know what makes, what kind of interaction can make a difference in entanglement entropy or not. That's where, my very recent speculation since last night, which probably is wrong, is that, at least it looks like maybe, you have to make a difference in the entanglement, the thermal entropy at least. So for instance, for Fermi liquid has the same entropy, thermal entropy as free fermion, right? So, and Fermi liquid has same entanglement entropy as free fermion. But I don't know, this is all speculation. But, because I don't know what to make of this yet, I would welcome more speculations, questions, and comments. Suggestions, ideas.
Very naive question. So Is it very hard to compute like the third Rennie entropy or something, or would that be useful?
I don't know whether it would be useful. I suppose calculation is feasible, but I don't know how. I think it depends on if depending on how exciting that is going to be. I guess it is a feasible calculation. You need another copy. You need a third copy, right? So this is essentially the numerical scheme is essentially like that of replica. We have two copies for second, three copies for third.
So is it true that in some sense what we really want is the von Neumann entropy? Would you agree with that?
That I don't know. I think, I mean, I'm personally, we are trying calculation of entanglement spectra right now, trying to see, you know, entropy is a, you know, trace of it. So if we look at spectra, maybe we'll learn more. That's something that we're trying right now.
Let's get the question back. Israel?
Just a quick question. So it looks like, so in the formula for the entropy, so there is a scale actually. So it's L over some, in principle, short distance cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
So you can easily get a factor 2 by taking this cutoff to be half
right.
of what it is.
But remember, so we have to, so comparing to some, you know, analytic expression is harder because of that, but we're comparing the free fermion to composite fermion where we kept everything the same, everything else the same, including the short distance cutoff. It's on a lattice. So short distance cutoff is the same.
All right.
Yeah.
Just wondering, is there something that you can change to make sure that the two, this factor of two is robust to, just to make sure it's not a coincidence?
So we've tried a couple of things. One is looking at different geometries, and we looked at two different systems. The particle number, we changed particle number. We also looked at the subregion geometry. What I just presented was for the subregion of sort of square. We also looked at subregion geometry of a strip, where you have instead of four sides, only two sides. And in all these cases, this result is holding. That is the best of our knowledge.
Did you look at the if I take a wave function? Did you study Friedel oscillations to make sure? To pull out 2kF?
Yes. So that is known from like old days. The Friedel oscillation was observed in the structure factor in the old publication by Ed and I believe Duncan. Either Duncan or Nick Reed, I don't know which one.
I see. From
yes.
That point
yes.
Of view.
Yes. It is. So to the extent that I think it was the initial paper by Nick and Ed, they saw this Friedel oscillation and they said this is like Fermi-like liquid. So you can say it's Fermi-like or not quite Fermi, but you can see the Friedel oscillation of that 2kF, and that's the same kF as you expect from the construction of filling of the Fermi-C.
Okay.
Any further questions? We have a 20-minute break. We're back in here at 3 o'clock. Let's thank Una again.